approach, how you take an approach is something, there are several steps. In fact, few people also onboard some external agencies to help them achieve this certification, because it's sometimes if you do not have anything, it becomes a little complicated in nature, right? So sometimes you need an expertise who can help you in going through this process, right? So the step one, you establish the information security for your organization. You set up your security organization, probably the organogram. You clearly define, you also define the scope. Again, a very important element. ISO 27000 also deals with a very specific scope. So if you want to have your only unit or a plant to be certified as an ISO, probably you will have only that as a scope. Okay, they will not deal or they will not go and assess your centralized processes. So if you say that, you know, that's being managed by central IT or a corporate IT, they will not touch those areas. They will only see only the areas where if the local servers are in that scope, how the change management happens on the local server, they will assess only that much. So scoping is very important, because based on scoping, your mix and matches gets increased. Your probably commercial also would get increased from the assessor. Finally, you take the risk assessment. As I said, ISO 27000 works predominantly on the risk-based approach. So that's something you need to identify. And once you identify the risk, the controlling objective or the control objective also needs to be in place against each risk. You may, as an organization, define that you need to have control only for high and you know, critical ones. Maybe it's okay to have no controls for moderate and the low risk. Again, depends on your organization risk appetite. But once you identify and document the control, it is important that you implement it and you get it audited. Why you get it audited? As I said, just to ensure that these controls are working on ground or not. So 114 controls, which we just spoke about, and the statement of applicability is nothing but a scope wherein you clearly define that this is applicable, this may not be applicable. You defined exclusions also very, very categorically. If you are not using a localized tool, probably you would like to call them out as an exception very clearly. Otherwise, if the scope is not clear, sometimes the certification doesn't go well. You call out the external agency. They spend 2 or 3 days at your plant with you, understand the process, they validate certain policies, controls, procedures, and they finally offer you the certification, right? So that's how the approach goes in for ISO. It's again a different subject altogether. We are not expected to go into the great detail, but with the great extent, I explain you that it's a 3-year certification process. You have the surveillance audit and you also have a recertification after 3 years, right? So that it just helps in assuring that you are continue to meet the guidelines, continue to meet the standards, okay? Importance, we have already discussed. You have the basic credibility in the industry. That's very important. You are assured, senior management is assured that yes, somebody else has certified me, so I am in good shape. ITIL. Again, framework, one of the framework specifically for the service. Okay, so we have discussed ITIL at a great extent in our previous chapter, but the reason of having this here, in the last chapter, to have a concluding remark on, you know, why the ITIL framework is required, why and how it helps in defining the total cost of ownership. Once you have a established framework in mind, you have the organization's effectiveness also to be improved, right? If you are not working in a specific direction in a specific framework, maybe it's very tough to achieve the customer satisfaction, and that's where at the core the ITIL framework plays a role, where you have customer centricity, you have all the processes like incident management and everything covered. You also have some on the project management, and outsourcing, insourcing, and everything covered, so that you are sure that whatever the critical areas are factored in are covered for. Okay. So with this ITIL framework, we know and we discussed in the past that it works on a 4P principle. It is not 4P of marketing, it's 4P of IT, which focuses on the people, products, partners, and the processes. So pretty much covering the entire gambit. if you want to talk about people, employee, external agencies. If you talk about product, maybe your device is in line, maybe partners, your OEM, your external agencies, and the processes, finally your SOPs, your information security policies, and so on and so forth, right? Framework, if you recollect the circle diagram, the huge the diagram which we had discussed, this is a kind of an extension to it, wherein you see that the ITIL framework predominantly works on the business. It also covers the technology, and if you see in the middle, which covers everything. It covers your business perspective, your business need, business ask. It covers your service management, your support structure, your vendor management, your service delivery per se. Your security also is being factored as a part of your ITIL framework. So just a brush up on what we learned in detail in the past sections. Okay. Service strategy, we know that what it covers is something on the processes required for planning and delivering of quality of IT services. Service design, customizing the services as per the customer need. As I said, IT and business cannot work in silo, it has to be aligned. And operation, once you implemented, the regular sustenance and operations is very much important. And that's where, you know, you see the value which gets delivered to our IT users. You also see whatever business benefits which were documented or which were envisaged, are we meeting those business objectives or not? Okay. Service transition and service management and continuous service improvement is again the only key or only focus of the ITIL process. That's where, you know, people sometimes lack. The continuous service management, and there is always a scope, and that's where, you know, the CMMI levels are, you know, defined. However, it's out of the syllabus of this course, but CMMI level is, you know, it's something you might have seen that some IT companies, they write it that CMMI 4 level certified. That's, you know, that shows the maturity of that organization, that from the policy front, from the continuous improvement front, they are, you know, covered, and they are doing fantastic job there, right? ITIL also covers on the application management and the business perspective, how these applications are going to help them achieve whatever is being asked for. Again, I keep on repeating, if it is not aligned, see, I from IT folks, you may want to achieve the zero incident. You may want to achieve, you know, the latest technology in the world. But if it is not meeting the business expectation, nobody would, you know, kind of assess you. I will not go into the great detail of this framework, but it just talks about the several building blocks of the ITIL frameworks. So if I just call out, it covers the business, it covers the service delivery, you know, which is important. It also covers the operations, application management, and the entire chunk, right? So the reason of showing this diagram to you is just to give you an idea that to what length and breadth it, you know, covers the entire process. Governance. Having framework in place, it's okay, but do we have the adequate governance practices? So if I read the definition from ISACA, which is also a governing body, which provides a CISA and CSUM certification or C-Series certifications, as per them, they clearly call out the governance as, the governance is an inclusive term, okay? Every term has its own relevance, okay? It's an inclusive term which encompasses the information system technology and connectivity, business, legal, and other issues. All concerned stakeholders, directors, senior management, process owners, IT suppliers, users, and auditors. What is left? What is left? Nothing, right? So the governance piece is a kind of mechanism. Though it is shown and treated sometimes as a very flashy word, but it's very important. In fact, many of the organizations have governance as a complete department itself, right? Whose job is to carry out all this, how it impacts, you know? So it covers, caters the, or addresses the any issues related to the business, or maybe the ERP, or maybe some other process, right? So say, for example, if you have some fraud happening, you know, entering your raw material. So suppose if you're dealing with the crude oil industry, and if you see that someone is siphoning off or stealing the crude oil, you know, from the tankers, maybe somewhere you're missing out on your governance. Maybe by having the manless waybridge would help. Definitely, it would help, right? It also assures the security, reliability, and the integrity of the strategic information. Again, a very high words, very important words, and each word holds its own relevance. It also protects the enterprise investment in IT, including the system and network. Having invested is one thing, but having them protected is something very important, right? And finally, it gives the comfort to the management that yes, they are in a safe hands, they are good, and you know, in case of event, they are prepared for handling the situation. Some critical questions one must ask when we talk about governance as a framework. Remember the corporate governance and IT governance, which we spoke some time back, is something, you know, the question, hard questions though, but it needs to be asked. That is the enterprise doing the right things? Is it doing the right way? Suppose if I am into dealing with providing some services to some external agency or maybe some equipment to some agency, am I doing it right way? So that's something the thought process should come from the top. Is the use of IT efficient? I may have placed several such systems, several such solutions, but are they being used? Are they user friendly? If I have enabled the encryption for my laptops, and if the users are working the docking station, okay, and it's probably the inconvenience for them. It's causing an inconvenience to have an additional password for encryption. Is it in line with the expectation of the customer? Okay, can I have some other workaround which can make the user's life easy? Okay, and does the organization have a long-term IT strategy? Again, very important. You may have a short-term goal as well as you may have the long-term ones also, but the endeavor is also always to have the long-term also, for the simple reason that whatever investment I am making today, is it going to achieve what I have the long-term strategy? Okay, IT governance, you might have heard the words of COBIT. COBIT is sometimes, or most of the time, is referred in the financial institutions, maybe a banking or some other firm, where they focus more on the inclusiveness of the business processes also. Very, very important. Okay, you cannot have only the IT talks. If you have the business requirement, you need to have the business individuals also to be onboarded along with IT whenever you are defining the methodology. Okay, cyber laws, will be touching base very briefly on it. We have an Indian Act of 2000. Not much renewal or the revisions happened on this law, but as we speak today, there are talks happening in the parliament on the data privacy and certain other amendments. So soon we should have some revision on the IT Act, but this current IT Act also is very elaborative. Go through it if you have interest, but you know, it covers quite some amount of information there. Land of law, it's something more holds relevance when you are multi-geographically spread across organization. If you have a presence in China, you probably have to deal with the law in line with the China. Similarly, the example which I had quoted, that you know, if you are communicating a transaction in the China, it needs to pass through a great firewall of China. Maybe the encryption of the laptop is not allowed in China without the government's approval. If you talk about Egypt, maybe they also have similar requirement that they need to or the local service provider need to pass the logs to the government agency to ensure that there is no fraudulent things or the transactions are happening in my country, right? So the more detailing is actually given in the book. Maybe you would like to go through it in the detail. But just to give a finishing touch on the subject is something on a business resiliency. So your BCPDR, whatever you're defining, should be in line with the thought process of whichever facility which you are picking up. So we'll be talking in this section on more on the hot site, cold site, and how your data center should be placed. But with this, with the idea of moving everything on the cloud or the cloud first approach, this somewhere it is losing the relevance. However, some basics also needs to be factored in even if you are putting your workloads on the cloud. So let's see the types of the resiliency infrastructure availability which we have. Mirror or redundant or a dual data center. Okay, it's nothing but what I would say is to simply, obviously you can read the text at later point in time, but in a nutshell, it is actually a replica of your existing facility or your existing data center facility. Okay, whatever transaction you are carrying out at your primary data center, immediately it gets reflected on your disaster recovery site. So the downtime is generally next to zero. Who uses this? The commercial banks which are governed by regulatory bodies, or maybe the government organization who wants their portal services to be given to the citizens of the country all the time, they generally prefer such kind of mechanisms. With this having the cloud in place, we just need to subscribe a service and we should be good there. Hot site, a little bit different than the redundant one. The option here would be is you have again the downtime is comparatively reduced or minimized, let's say depending on the other flavors, because it's hot and kind of having exact a replica. But the only downside could be that you may have a little bit of delay in replicating the data. So the little bit of delay could be of few minutes also, and it could be a few seconds also, but of course it's very much in line, exact replica of your primary data center. Again, the downtime is comparatively less. Warm site generally do not have the real-time data. It is always a little bit of delay. So what it will have the raised floor, or maybe the power, or maybe the utilities, and also the server infrastructure or the switch infrastructure, and all these things will be in place, basic, but it will not have a real-time data. So why it will not have a real-time data? Then maybe you need to have a replicated data to which takes some time to catch up. So maybe your link connecting between two data center is not efficient enough, and there is always a delay, and that's where the RPO, RTO, plays a major role, because you know for sure that if the logs are in specific GBs of size, or the backup takes a certain amount of time, I'll definitely have some delay while I'm restoring my services from the disaster recovery point of view. Okay, it is less expensive. It's not very costly state of affairs. The another advantage you get is because you are not storing any data or something, maybe it's flexible also. If you want to move, change provider, change the co-location facility, probably it becomes easy. But the downside is, as I said, you do not have the very good uptime, and also the time for the resources to make this facility up is little bit more. They would need to put some more manual intervention. Their time will also be utilized to make this facility up and running. Further down, the cold site is they will not have any data and not even hardware. It will have only the basic facility of the power and the utility and the air condition, but not more than that. So in the event if you want to take a use of this facility, probably you'll have to build everything from scratch. You probably have to ask the person deployed on site, or maybe you have the arrangement from your partner, from your vendor, who is going to provide you the hardware, is to ship the hardware. You build the hardware, you build the operating system, application, restore the data, and then only you can throw for use. Very time consuming. The downtime, if you have the liberty of say having the three or four days of downtime, you can evaluate this option. But again, it's a cheaper because you are not investing right on the day one from the infrastructure investment point of view or from the data point of view. So that's something a difference. Finally, mobile site is something which is available on the containerized based. It's not very prominent and used in India, I mean, because of the several infrastructure, but you have a container where you have the AC and all basic structure in place, and this container also comes with the an additional power supply or a gen set kind of. So it also comes with their own kind of internet connectivity, right? So if you have an arrangement or an agreement with the provider, they can ship the container based the mobile data center with you. You build on it, and then you can throw it for use. Again, the cheaper one. Here, the helpful is it's not a kind of longer term investment. So you can use as per the paper model, because the provider who is offering you the containerized based solution, they are into the same very business. So they will obviously rebuild the container for the other customers if there is need. Not much used. But still, there is the option which we can explore. Reciprocal agreement. This is you will see as an arrangement between two companies, between two organizations of the same very nature. Say, for example, if you have if you are into the payroll processing industry, or if you are into the call center business, okay. And within a building, you have two or three different call centers companies who are working out from that facility, and they also have their data center from the same very facility. Now, if something goes wrong at your floor, so maybe there is a short circuit happened on your floor, and you want to move your agents onto the some other company. Now, since you are into the same business, the basic infrastructure would be the same, right? So you can just use your software, your agent, and then you can start providing services to your customer. So that's something called as a reciprocal agreement. It is also called as a mutual aid agreements. Again, whenever you have some shortage of fund, or you have a crunch, and you have a similar kind of mindset, and you have trust between the organization that the IPs or the intellectual properties will not be stolen or it will not be leaked out. This is a model which can be leveraged on. Multiple processing center. The concept wherein you have the facility running from the several other places as an active arrangement. You are not dependent only on the primary. You are not dependent only on the secondary. You have your few critical resources, critical applications run from one data center, and another critical one from the another data center simultaneously all the time. Again, it comes with its own additional investment, but there are several businesses who for them if they want to kind of load balance the investment or the load balance the servers, this is probably the model to go with. Okay, service bureaus is something you have a contract. Okay, the services is something you have a contract with the offsite service bureau. So it is different than what the service agreement which we were talking about. But this is wherein you have an offsite partner who are into this business, and they can provide you the facility as and when you need. So it's a kind of ready-made available plate. You say heat and consume. So likewise, you have the several partners. Like say for example, if you want an event organizer, right? You call the event management company, and they are specialized in that industry. They manage everything for you, right? They right from the calling the people, right from providing the pass, right from providing or booking the hotels and everything. They take care of it, right? So likewise, these service bureaus are the specialized in their industry. And since they are specialized in the industry, it makes the job easy for the company representative to deal with the situation. So they are also specialized into technology. They also provide the several business domains and so forth. Like say for example, if you want to outsource your website management, probably you can have such kind of arrangement. Finally, to give the finishing touch of the entire subject and the way forward, I want to touch base on few very very important and very hyped element of blockchain and the containerization. So let's talk very briefly. Obviously, we'll not go into the much detail, but yes, businesses have started using the blockchain as a technology. You know, blockchains are sometimes helps you in providing you know, the solution when you have tremendous load of transactions, when you have loads and loads of transactions to be analyzed. So this is a technology which you can consider using. Obviously, it's an expensive state of affairs, but this is going to be future, right? So here, the transaction records are encrypted using the cryptographic way. So you see the ad of the bitcoins which they are dealing with, right? So that's actually precisely they're using this technology. A very secure in a way, but yes, here you have the block wise structure of the data, and you know, each block is very securely placed with the help of cryptographic technology. Okay, and you know, that's where the beauty of this solution comes in. You have a linkage of each block only after validation from the previous block. Right, so it's an entire chain. So if something is wrong in one chain, they will probably the data could be useless, right? So as I said, blockchain generally is being used when you have enormous transaction volume or whenever you are dealing with the lot of data, and you know, that's where the use case will pop in. Container, the final most one, is something it provides the standard way. It provides some standards again in dealing with the application code, which goes into the configuration, and it also helps in building the the object, right? So if you can go through who can use or who uses the containerization. So containerization is generally where you want to, as a fundamental, the containerization is the isolation, right? So you deal with the data in the silos, right? And then you kind of correlate it in a meaningful way. So this isolation helps you what? So isolation allows the container based on the applications to be deployed easily and consistently. You need not to wait for the entire module to get over. If you're one of the container is probably ready, plug it and you can at least throw it for a use, right? So that's something, the thought process which is coming out. Here the target environment is the private data center generally, and on the public cloud. Even it could be your a single end user's machine as well, okay? Very much a machine, because I'm stripping out the data into the smaller segments, I need not to have a heavy compute. I can very much achieve this with from the local laptop also, and then I can obviously merge the data together. Okay, if everything goes wrong in the single container, the security attack or a security breach, probably the excessive consumption of the resources by the process. The another example, it will affect only that segment. That's the beauty of this containerization. Because I'm dealing in the isolation, why you think the police and the local authorities containerized the areas in the event of COVID to avoid the spread, right? So whatever happens, it will happen only in that containerized zone so that my major impact can be achieved, can be saved, right? So with this this container the other topic, we'll move on to the quantum computing. Again, I have personally not seen the very much use cases of the quantum computing to be used in my so many years of career, but I think this is also a booming industry and maybe it will take some time to get matured. But just to have the basic idea is nothing but it is something different from our traditional way of compute, okay? And how it is, it is all works on the quantum physics technology. Now again, those of you who are more interested into the quantum physics technology, they can have the deep dive in this subject. But right now, for our subject point of view, we need to understand that the quantum computing will have a capability to solve the problems in matter of fraction of seconds. That's the only beauty, because they are considered to be a high computing environment, and since they are high computing, so like earlier days we used to have a supercomputers, right? So the supercomputers, now of course all computers are supercomputers, but earlier days the supercomputers used to be a hype. Why? Because they were carrying out the mathematical calculations in the fraction or in shorter amount of time, right? So similarly, this quantum computing is also going to be a level up. However, may have the significant threat on the encryption, because if I have a high compute, probably my hackers will be in a position to decrypt my encrypted information in a shorter amount of time. Today I may have 256 bit encryption, I may have 512 bit encryption, which is virtually impossible to break. But with this quantum computing, probably it could be an easy target to achieve. So with this, let's quickly revise what we learned in this chapter. Okay, so we learned what are the importance of business impact assessment. We understood what is the business continuity planning. We understood what is the disaster recovery, what should go in, what are the tabletop exercise, how frequently you should carry out the the BCPDR drill. We also spoke about the types of data centers. We spoke about the hot site, cold site, mirror site, or maybe the mobile site, reciprocal agreement, and so on and so forth. We spoke about ISO 27001 control. We spoke about the ITIL framework, the very much elaborative one. And to support the BCPDR, we also spoke about how you derive on the RPO, or recovery point objective or recovery time objective, how it is very, very important for an organization, for an IT, for a senior leadership to understand. And finally, we just touch based on the new emerging technologies on blockchain, container, and finally quantum computing. I'm sure you would have loved this subject. I truly appreciate the time for each session you have spent with me. I wish you all the very best. Take care of yourself. Thank you so much.